I'll be up in Edinburgh 11th, 12th, just a weekend.
Right, so you're out for 11th, 12th of May?
Yep, and I'm going to Brussels on the 8th of April as well. That's probably too, it's not far, it's only a couple of weeks, so but that'll probably be too early.
No, it's not easy, we just
email.
Yeah. When are you looking for, Michael, to set the next one?
End of May would be good.
Yeah, it's okay for me.
When are you looking to have Sheffield sort of open so people can go, not necessarily with the machinery in, but to secure the fact that, you know, we know we've got it, we know it's...
Please speak to my habit and ask him when we can have it for.
Right.
It gives us the time. So we need it towards the end of May.
I think there's, as far as, I think you've seen the pictures, haven't you? So I think it's at the stage where it needs a bit of a clean out.
That's fine.
You know, maybe a bit of a decoration and whatever, so...
If you speak to him and ask him if we can have it at the end of the month,
yeah.
If anything needs doing to beforehand, cleaning out, painting, let us know.
Get a date.
I'm happy to go and get it ready. If you guys can let me know when you're available, looking towards the end of May, we'll set the next meeting and we'll do it. That way, everybody's going to be convinced that we can do it.
We can't do the circuit expert first, and all we've got to meet it. And she was happy and proud. I'm not
thankful.
I'm always rooted to do it because I'm sick of asking experts for help.
Then we need to speak to...
And we need to balance from the internet after we've been asked.
We've got a very good electronics expert, but we've just got to talk to him. I don't know why. As I said, I changed the day specifically for him to come to today because he couldn't make Saturday.
He's not picking up his phone.
And he's not picking up his phone. All right, I'll email him when I go back to the room.
I also have a colleague who's very good at
electronics.
Mm-hmm.
He's
not aware of this project. So if we give him an outline of what we're watching, he can definitely be
there. Will you speak to him, George?
Yes, but I'll read the specification on what he's building.
Okay.
I don't need to know what that is.
Well, you and I will organise that over the next few days, perhaps, because we're fairly close together, aren't we? Is he in Coventry?
No, he's not. He's Richard Dobbyshire.
Well, that's not far from me, if that helps.
Okay, that's it. We concluded.
Just one question on that. If we only build the tanks out in the frothing cup, how do we measure whether it's over-unity? Is this the target? Are we trying to find out, can we make an over-unity device?
How do we know?
We know there's a great frost, so how do we know if we're getting more energy out than goes in? If you go to accept standard values for the calorific value of hydrogen,
or what's going to be the next gas? And the voltage rises on its own,
right,
in the north working, then you put that into something as noddy as that or whatever, just so you can seal it in.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter, all it is measuring the gas flow then, isn't it?
Right.
You have a cheese coming out, goes into a bottle, it's got water in it, it pours the water out of the bottle.
Right.
And just a good one. What you don't do is what they're doing on the YouTube video. Well, they don't actually put the bottle upside down. They have the bottle the right way up with the bottom missing and a leaky top. So when it looks like it's producing gas, all it's actually doing is leaking at the top and losing water. So look out for that when people are going 6 litres per minute for 10 amps.
So once we've established the flow rate and we say it's 2 litres a minute from whatever power source it is, how do we then say, what is the energy value?
I think that's when the engine will come in, because I think we're going to have to put it together as a practical construct and actually work it with a generator.
Because Dave Borson's publisher, values that he says, from the chemistry books, it has a calorie value so much per cubic centimetre. Does do we accept that, or do we...
Calories don't run engines.
Yeah. Oliver, do we need to have... Is it got to be a Lister engine? Can it be any other engine?
No, I mentioned the rotary engine earlier, RX-7.
RX-7 or an RX-8?
It's quite a few of those in scrap, isn't it?
Yeah, you can pick RX-8 single entry rotary engines up for next to nothing. As long as it's an engine at the end of the day. And what have you learned? I'll take it out of my son's car, he's got an RX-8.
I'm sure he's implemented your
hat. Then he shoved. I took his engine out, so I've just got to borrow this.
But basic question about the sort of efficiency, and I think Mike might agree with this. For 1 kilogram of hydrogen, requires 120,000 kilowatts.
Right.
So for that, that's equivalent to 11,200 litres.
Okay. Is that in litres per pounds per litre per minute into our work?
Exactly what I mean. You know,
depends on the rate.
That's sort of figure, so you can sort of chop that down if you want. Can I propose, Mike, another A4 sheet?
Yes.
Data sheet on hydrogen hydroxycation production, so that we can get clear on units.
Again, I can produce any amount of stuff like that.
It's how to measure a kilogram of hydrogen and oxygen when it's lighter than that.
Well, very difficult in addition as you split during the process. So that is one metric, but science says it is the one.
Is there not a better way of looking at it? Because the way I've always measured it is because it's flowing through a bottle and forcing out as well. It's late. It's
a But at the end of the day, you've got a device running a motor and we've got a generator attached there. Right. We're getting, say, a kilowatt hour. Yeah. We've got a 9-volt battery.
That's good for the
outside. It's like, it's a low brain.
You don't know whether you're using it efficiently or not on your engine or anything, or what volume, because you don't know what volumes you're producing.
You'd have to be working on 100% efficiency rather than no engine to be 100% efficient. So you can't measure the volume of gas just simply through the burn of the engine. There's got to be a different way of calculating that. Again, I'll have a look at that. I don't think it's actually necessary.
I don't think. Under normal circumstances, you fill the piston chamber with a mixture of air and fuel. Hydrogen and oxygen is very different. As soon as you start mixing it with air, it loses, or it changes the way it goes back. And you do playing with it for a bit instead of going straight to an engine and watching it made itself. Because if, for example, you fill a balloon with just hydrogen and oxygen, said to a chemist, does it float, a balloon with hydrogen and oxygen? He says, no, I said, well, I've seen it float.
It will float.
If you light it, it goes bang, viciously. Mm-hmm. You know, nice. If you fill it with air first, and then just fill a tiny bit, I was actually doing it for a lamp on a mug. And people stood in front of it. And when you light the balloon, it's like someone's punched them in the chest. It really is the slowest boom. But if you do it with like looser, it's not the same. So when we mixed it with air going into an engine, it's just turning air off. You're not filling the cylinder. There's a pressure vacuum in there.
Yeah.
That's making it different. I don't know what happens to hydrogen and oxygen when you suddenly introduce it into a vacuum. I'm only going to be when you do it either. But that's when it starts becoming something else. We were on about before, ionizing is one thing, but the way nitrogen and hydrogen react with one another in a long vacuum totally transforms the two elements. And I think it's the same when it goes into an engine. If it doesn't need to be filled, you know, so if you were using the volume of fuel that the engine chewed up, you could be swamping it. And you might want to give it a bit of air to slow the burn down. Or deionize it rather than ionize it, because the gas is ionized, which is why it doesn't have any calories, but it'll melt materials. So if you get a piece of clay boiling around, hold it in your fingers and turn it into glass. Normally we'd have to put that in the furnace for 10, 20 minutes, heat it up to 2,000 degrees, you know. It doesn't happen in your hand. You know, but I've seen it on George. You've not seen Claire. It just turned into black glass.
What?
But George brought some fire brick. Yeah, well, George brought some fire brick round.
Yeah.
It burns like limelight. And yet you can hold the end of the torch to it, you can put your hands in it. It's not calories. But luckily we've got a rocket fuel index, which is how they measure rocket fuels. And nitrogen's at the top of that one, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
Whereas at the bottom of the calorie one. And of course naysayers always say it's not as calories in an engine. You ask someone who runs engines, you don't want the engine to get hot. You want the business to be run down because it's just a problem.
Yes.
See, I get a bit confused. If you've got a perfect mixture of hydrogen and oxygen, it combusts and collapses to 1/1600th of its volume, creates a vacuum. And yet you add it to a hydrocarbon, and it causes the hydrocarbon to burn faster, and that expands the fuel inside the piston chamber, driving the piston down. And then if you're burning hydrogen and oxygen, in a weak mixture in air, it appears to expand again. And there must be some sort of crossover point where certain mixtures of hydroxy gas and atmospheric air, or hydroxy gas and some other gas, whether it's a petrol mixture or whatever it might be, there must be a crossover point at which it neither collapses nor does it explode. And I'm just a little confused about what the purposes of setting fire to hydrogen and oxygen. Are we trying to create a vacuum or are we trying to create an explosion? I don't know. But it seems that hydroxy gas is capable of both.
But it really drops.
Yeah, because it just becomes the water. So
it drops to 1600. It's hot enough, and the water will expand, isn't it?
It gives off energy, but it collapses back down to the droplets of water.
You're saying it doesn't burn hot, so I'm probably completely off the rail. But I really thought it would give out a lot of energy when it combines together, which would turn the water to steam, which would expand.
Yeah.
We used to put foam liquid in a glass tomorrow. Fill the bubbles with hydrogen and oxygen and light it. And I've had some videos on YouTube because I managed to get the frames of the battery and do the stills off it. And you see the foamy bubbles at the top, me going in there with my lighter, and obviously my fingers in the ear. And then all of a sudden, on the next frame, the foamy stuff has disappeared, it's gone like that into a big swirl and flattened down to the bottom of the glass. And then the next frame, the water's everywhere because it's hit. The shockwaves come right down, splatting, and the water splashes up the glass. If you're unlucky, the glass smashes. But normally it doesn't. So it's quite controlled. You know, we're not having any disasters, glass fire glasses or anything. We've got badly made hydrogen machines.
But that's why they did it.
It could have done for a brief second, but it doesn't really. It's got to do that. since the water went all over the place, it expanded. Well, that's Africa.
That's a shockwave. If you slap the water, of course, there's going to be a counter reaction.
Is it worth trying to nail this down, Mike? What happens to hydroxy gas?
Yeah, I think it is.
Or is it just too complex?
No, I don't think there's no such thing as too complex. You know, if it's too complex, then you break it down into manageable chunks, which will still give you the same result at the end. It just might take a little bit longer. But yeah, it's worth investing in.
I think three different types of gas. There's a bang, and they come out of different machines.
All of this will have an influence on the end product. And exactly which aspect of this technology that we are developing, because it will be a new technology in a sense, which aspect of the new technology is the one we're going to carry forward?
Make it reliable, you can say which.
Exactly. That's why I say it's worth investing in. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. The more knowledge you've got about what's going on, the easier it is for you to develop something from it or to minimise the bad effects of it. And no doubt there's going to be some bad effects. So we have to keep those to a minimum or under control, because at some point some smart ass from some government department is going to come along and say health and safety.
You've not thought about this.
You can't do that. You know, we're stopping it, thank you very much. And we've got to expect something like that. So we've got to make it bulletproof from government's perspective. So they can come along and say nothing.
Hydroxy gas safety sheet.
Yes. Well, we need data sheets. I'll provide data sheets on all the elements that we are working with, so that everybody's got a basic knowledge of, you know, what hydrogen is, what oxygen is. Probably already know that, but I'll provide them anyway.
Just out of interest, I don't know if you want to read the book Cold Deep in Physics by William Lahr. He's got in there a device, basically a closed little tube, which uses hydrogen is either in diatomic or monatomic form, whatever, but effectively, this is the hydrogen collapsing to produce it, and it recycles itself. I can drag it up around and show you. Mm-hmm. But you say this is one of the technologies that's been in the way, that you have to have this thing all sort of recombine. But it's actually the collapsing of the atoms is giving the energy.
So it's
beyond me, but I'll scan and send it to you now. Maybe an excuse of no idea about hydrogen. So he's basically saying it's in a few different states, and from these different states, it's either going to be exploding or collapsing and giving an awful lot of energy out.
Because an explosion gas has two forms of energy as it delivers. One is the heat that it gives out, the rise in temperature of the gas, and the other is as it creates that pressure, letting the volume expand, and then you extract kinetic energy from the movement of that. So it could be the reverse with the hydroxy collapse, then that you can get the suction to do mechanical work by making the piston move towards the drop of the water.
Yeah.
And they may also give out heat.
But I've seen models of atomic hydrogen torch with thermals.
So with the electrodes.
There's an electrode, and then fires hydrogen through it, and it's infinitely hotter than what we can make today. Mm. And we don't have them anymore.
Yeah, this is related, actually.
So yeah, it is.
It's actually related. Yeah, so
what's interesting is you speak to a scientist. He'll tell you that hydrogen is a H2, it's very rarely in H1 form, we don't even think about it. Okay, so how do you think all this atomic hydrogen talk work? So join me now, Dan, anybody know? Go have a look at his website. He's a brilliant researcher in France, he does everything, he has a go at. If someone says he doesn't work, he'll make it.
You're talking about Mason's hydrogen.
Doesn't matter, you can label it what you call it, balloon.
Well, H1?
Chewing gum. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But what's interesting in this particular thing, he made a recycled one, which is what we're on about. The hydrogen is in an environment.
Is there water in there as well?
Oh, God, I recall. No, it's got a bit of a big cooling thing, but I think it's in the chance. You arc the hydrogen, but you're not using it for welding, it's trapped inside a reactor. So the hydrogen in the arc becomes H1s, floats up, comes back and becomes H2s and releases an immense amount of heat, and that's what we should be heating our homes with. It's not even a fancy thing, is it?
It's not difficult.
I'll scan it, send it to Mike.
Please do. I mean, that's another thing we can
do. What's his name? It was
William Marl. A cult ether physics. In fact, you get some.
A cult ether physics?
Yeah.
And William Love, did you say?
Lyle.
Lyle. A cult. As in hidden.
Yeah. And if you look at Meltdown's work, it's.
Jean-Louis Nadin. Loads of stuff on there for anyone who hasn't looked at it.
Close the meeting, gentlemen.
Well, before you do that, Mike, can I just ask if there's any, because you mentioned previously, I was curious, that you'd been involved with some water fuel cell development a few years ago.
And yeah, about 5 years ago.
I just wondered if there's any, so obviously if anybody with experience like that can be fed into this process. I mean,
Not really.
Why would that be?
Because the tax cell is a much simpler and I think much more efficient way of moving forward. Rather than trying to do high frequency electricity and pulsing it and messing around with it until you get exactly what you want.
So you're saying then from that development your experience was that you were using this?
It produced gas, but not very efficiently.
Right.
Yeah. And I think we were using 1.7 volts and 200 milliamps was our input current. And we were producing gas from a standalone cell. Very much like Myers, but he shows on his. Papers
in this video. Was that your goal to sort of reproduce the Myers cell?
My goal today.
At
that point, it was purely an experiment.
Right.
It was purely to, you know, let's. What's this all about? Let's have a look at it. We built it and it worked. After a fashion. That's not what I want to do.
Right. Was this an EU?
WFC is just a means to an end here.
Yeah.
We're looking for the most efficient way. Whether it's WFC or not, it doesn't matter, to make no difference what the method is, as long as we achieve the desired result, which is to provide energy for people for free.
So in your opinion then, from that development previously, you think that's sort of...
It's not a way forward.
Right.
I don't think you could produce sufficient gas in quantity to drive the motor, to drive the electricity generator.
Right.
This has, the tank cell is far better.
And was that you and a good group of guys, or was it...?
Yeah, it was just that three or four friends.
Right.
We just got together. And lots of things we were doing at the time, just WFC, lots of stuff. We built a little magnetic motor that was continually running, but not producing an awful lot of energy. But it was working on its own, without any further input. But I think the tank cell has got the better possibility of actually achieving what we want to achieve quickly. Be nice to have all you guys up on the stand at the next BCG conference, because that's what I'll do. If we get it working before then, or if we get it working after a fashion, sufficient to show people at conference, look, this is what your energy group is doing, and I might be able to ask for some money for this. If we've got something we can show, I might be able to get some funding out of it. If we can show to the conference, which is about 400 odd people, that we've actually produce something that is going to work for them and for the wider community, you'll all be up on the stage. I shall introduce you all one by one.
Isn't that going to open it to invested people?
People at conference, this conference, are going to be vetted, so I'm told. It's going to be a lot more secure than it was last year. So as long as I've got Roger's assurance that it is going to be safe for us to release this information.
Because that's always a danger.
Of course it is, yeah. Right at the top of my agenda is the security aspect. If it means we're running a risk of letting information out that could be used against us, then I won't do it. I won't release it at conference. But that's something we've all got to make a decision on. It's not something I'm going to make myself.
And also giving perhaps other groups information that should remain enclosed.
Well, information to the finance department, the health department, they don't need to know about what we're doing. I'm not going to release information to other groups within BCG that really have nothing to do with what we're doing. We'll keep it all to ourselves. If we release it at conference, it's a decision we'll all take together based on information from Roger. Hopefully we'll get Roger at the next meeting. And we can ask him questions about that. If he feels that it's safe to do so, then we'll do it. Because it gives confidence to the whole BCG movement to to know that their energy group has actually produced something that is going to benefit everybody.
Well, sorry, but there was something new to this. You mean British Constitution?
Yes, British Constitution.
Can I just say as well, we've booked the King George's Law on the 13th of July, which is a Saturday, for the annual conference. We wanted to actually do it sooner, but we couldn't get a Saturday. So with the King's Hall, then we could get up to, I think it's 1,000 people in there if we use both the...
Where is it?
It's in Stoke-on-Trent. Yeah. And we're looking as well on the 6th of April to have another Committee of 100 meeting in this venue. That's a Saturday. And then possibly 2 or 3 weeks after that, we're going to have a London meeting. So that'll be the southern half of the country for the Magna Carta Committee of 100 meeting.
But to summarise, we control what's going on with the group, all of us. Not just me, everybody has an input into what we do and how we do it. I hope that if anybody's got an issue with something, you'll talk about it. But not just to me, talk about it to everybody, so that we all know what's going on. We have to keep it wide open, but to the people within the group, not wide open to anyone outside the group. And we need to build confidence between ourselves, first and foremost, that we are going to move forward and we are actually going to achieve something. But I think I'm very pleased with today. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think we've taken a step forward and we'll actually start moving on.
Michael, are we going to discuss the end machine?
No, not today. I don't think so. End machine is something, yeah, it's quite a complex subject.
Yeah.
And we'll need quite a few hours to discuss that, which I don't have today. I've got to make a memory short. Any questions?
Will we be recording our progress, sort of video-wise? And
yeah, as soon as we start doing things, not just video, we'll keep a proper, what I call a laboratory log of everything that we do, so that any one of us can pick up that log and continue, or know what's gone before. So there'll be a record of everything that we do, distributed to everybody. Again, that's one of my responsibilities, I will do that. So you all have regular updates and regular information on what progress we've made, how we've made it, what point we're at, and where we hope to be at the next stage. So that will be done properly. Okay, thanks gentlemen. Brilliant.
All of them watching the this website, so it's very interesting. What's it? Yeah. Do you know the website as well?
George, can you get in touch with me as well? As quickly as possible. Let me know. I'd like to, if possible, meet with him at Stoke. I'd like all of us to be
brilliant. Just J.L. Nordam.
Right, I'm just going to, because I'm terrible at reading other people, so it's J.L.
N. A-U-D-I-N.
D-I-N. .fr.
.fr, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks. Just need to
yes, water boost. Water boost, as in boosting water. Water in £1.50. Well, I think I saw you at BCG.
Yeah,
so your face was familiar, but so I thought we'd do it. So that's a great thing. Johnny Good.
I saw your interview with Richard.
Right, Johnny Good, yeah. Well, that's all one of these other con jobs. We've done another one, and he's just put that on the website. It hasn't gone out on TV yet. It's going to go out, I think, on Thursday, but...
Your feeling is that no astronauts actually walked on it?
Not quite. None of the named astronauts went up in Apollo craft,
right,
as described in all the books and videos.
Do you believe there was an Apollo 20, so sort of talked about?
Don't know. I mean, could have been. I just haven't seen the evidence, I haven't studied it. My main bag with the Apollo really was to convince myself from the evidence that what we were shown was not true. Parts of it may have been true, you know, but the overall story is untrue. And I think if you listen particularly, and I say particularly, as I highlighted on the second programme, to what Neil Armstrong said, he was essentially telling you that.
Uncover the whatever layers of truth.
Right, exactly. And I mean, my view of Neil Armstrong is that he was a fine, upstanding guy, and he was, you know, brought into the Apollo program in the early 60s, whatever. You know, and he probably went through the training, but he only had a couple of years of training, whatever. And then they took him aside one day and said, "Lock me up. This Apollo thing, it's like part of a bigger thing which I can't really explain. And actually, we're going to just tell the world that you've been to the moon, and don't worry about it, we'll set it up so that everyone believes it. You know, and you're going to be like the first man on the moon, you're going to be a hero. So you don't need to worry about that. But actually, it's all going to be a fake." So, as you can appreciate, this is a matter of quite sensitive. So you can either sort of go along with us and be the most famous man in the world, or we'll look that way. You know, you'd be in the history books, like, okay, we'll sort all that out. Or, if you tell anybody about what I've just told you, we'll arrange for an accident for you to be killed, or and most of your family to be sort of done in as well. You know, so it's your choice now, Neil. You know, I've given the information, so I know you're going to make the right choice. If what we've deduced is true, I think Neil Armstrong, if you look at the way he reacts, I think he's reacting from having been put in that sort of situation.
But wouldn't you then put in place something that, on your death, for whatever reason, would release the truth?
Not if you have family.
Yeah, but it could be on the condition that your family is no longer around.
Maybe he took it upon himself to do it in his own way, and that was by giving out these sort of somewhat guarded, encoded messages.
Yeah.
But he didn't give that many public interviews. He only gave, I think, probably in all the years since the moon landing, maybe 10 interviews, something like that, I would guess. And only a few of those are public. He did an interview with Patrick Moore, I think, in about late 69, early 70. He's done an interview with Ed Bradley, which is 2005. I think he's done a 2 or 3 magazine interviews. He did one for the Accounting Associates, which was in 2011. Okay then, Mike.
You take care, and I'll see you soon.
See you soon, yeah.
Nice to meet you, and I'll see you soon as well. Right, the next thing will be a general email to everybody about the tank circuit.
Okay, yeah, very good.
Get that organised, get the circuit designed, get it built, and once we've got that, then we'll have our next meet.
Yeah, no problem, Mark. Oh, yeah, great stuff. So, you know, I think that's what he was doing. He was keeping it. Maybe he came in and made his word, he wouldn't tell anyone. And if he was an honourable man.
Well, he was Mason, I assume.
So there's
an extra light on top.
Yeah. That's the other thing. I mean, I've temporarily forgotten that. You're absolutely right. If he made an opening within the Masons, maybe he realised that, you know, maybe he didn't want to break it. So to reconcile his own conscience, that's the way he chose to do it, by giving out these strange sort of semi-cryptic messages. And I think if you look at his body language, you look at the way he's interviewed, look at what he actually says, and I don't think
he's taking a chance though, do you?
He was. And I've heard rumours again that, you know, I don't know, I've tried to steer away from speaking about the rumours and talks, but that he was closely watched all his life. You know, he had agents watching him all the time. You know.
It's one of those things where, okay, if that is the case and your family has been threatened, that's happened to lots of other people, and they've just said, right, sod that, I'm going to tell the truth anyway, and then it's going to be so obvious that they've done it.
Right, I mean, people have reacted in different ways to these.